Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. We're celebrating a really cool thing that's happening at the Museum of Contemporary Art, May 10th, 10 a.m., Color, Light, Motion, Episode 28. Freddie Janka and Dr. Joanne Kuchera-Morin will be discussing four objects from the David Berman Foundation collection that all have to do with the allosphere in a symbiotic way almost. Freddie mentioned at the beginning of the show how this is sort of dovetailing and falling from DJ Javier San Milano Drive. Tell us more, Freddie.
Yeah, so the David Bermat Foundation has given us a grant to help support the exhibition. DJ Javier is a Filipino-American, Santa Barbara raised, went to DP, awesome designer and artist. This will be his debut museum exhibition. And part of what he was really excited to do was a karaoke machine. And so like a live performance. So what it reminded me of is the Nam June Park piece, which is a performative piece where you speak into a microphone and it translates on the TV screen and creates visual shapes essentially. And so it's called Participation TV 1969, which somebody just mentioned to me recently we might have shown at the Contemporary Arts Forum like back in the day. I need to double check that with the Bermat Foundation. But essentially, so then it got us thinking. It was like, oh, what if we expanded this idea of just a typical karaoke machine, which is very critical to Filipino culture. And basically what we proposed is making a videoke machine. So we're going to have some flat screens on the wall. We're looking at animating some of DJ's paintings and sculptures. He's never done that before. But then having this kind of vocal component that, you know, we will still be doing karaoke, but it's going to be expanded into this video sense. And so again, I would even take the video key over to the allosphere and see what happens.
We actually did. One of my grad students made a piece that was in the downtown museum in the one mall in Upper State called Oscilla, where you actually spoke into it and it was like a visual oscilloscope. And so people were able to make visual oscilloscope sound pieces. So interesting.
You know, we got 2 minutes, but Joanne, I'd love for you to give me one thing that the allosphere has done that surprised you.
I think the one thing that it's done that surprised me is to really realize how much it brings so many different people from so many different backgrounds together. People come in and they're in awe and they love what they see, they love what they hear, and they love to be able to actually enjoy it together. So
it's marvelous.
It's been the surprise.
Thank you all for being with me today.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, everybody.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. And I'm talking with a fascinating professor emeritus at the university, Dr. Joanne Kuchera-Morin, who will be speaking with Freddie Janka at the Museum of Contemporary Art Saturday, May 10th. And I think you all ought to be there. It's 10 a.m. Color, Light, Motion, Episode 28. I read this and I thought, oh, I got to talk with these folks. I got to cover this. It's so interesting. Now, I said to Freddie, I'm on your board, let's say, and you come to the board and you say, I've got an idea for a series, and it involves sound and light and technology and color and movement, and there's a big ball that you can walk into at the university, and inside this big ball, you get hit with a new way of looking at the world. How, what do you think? Shall we present? Shall we spend the museum's money and do a presentation? And then I say, as your board member, what? What? What about some good two-dimensional art we can hang on the wall? What's so bad about that?
Elizabeth, I know you know this, but artists have always been at the forefront of new technologies, new scientific innovations, and new ways of looking at the world from day one. We've been working on an exhibition project called Sangre de Nopal, which just closed, but it was part of the PST, Getty PST Art and Science Collide Initiative. And essentially our proposition to them in that case was art and science in indigenous and traditional thought and cosmology are not distinct. We're the ones who have created different categories of science and art and sciences and arts. And so, you know, this is really aligned with the way we're looking at the world. You know, we need to be up to date with technologies and looking at the world because art is always showing us our own world. So if we're, you know, it's the holding the mirror back at society, right? So this is critical to the work that we do as the board of the Museum of Contemporary Art. You know, we're sharing this with our communities. We're advocating for continued innovation and experimentation and new ideas in culture, technology, art, science, because at the end of the day, it helps us understand ourselves and humanity in a more complicated, complex, you know, interesting way. So this is work that we advocate for because this is what artists are looking at, and we're paying attention to artists. We follow artists. We don't tell artists where to go. We follow them.
Let's hope that continues. So, you know, this is, so just a little bit of a backtrack. I found it just amazing, and I got to look at it further some more, but I found it so amazing that this is coming from the mind of essentially a musician. And so, you know, Dr. Joanne said 40 years experience of digital media research, but she is a musician. She's a composer. And, you know, leading to the Digital Media Innovation Program. And I think about that, and I think about the relationship, as Richard was saying, I think during the break, he follows a gentleman who's been on his program a number of times that uses sound for healing purposes and sound for visualization purposes. And so sound is so important. So it started with sound, I guess, Joanne. And it ended up being a 30-foot diameter, three-story high metal cylinder inside an echo-free cube. Okay, so you see I'm confused as to where to go next, but I'm gonna ask you this. So I have a brother who's an engineer. I'm the only artistic person in the family. Everybody else, all my brothers, everybody that went to higher education in my family went except my mom, studied engineering, and essentially the way she looked at the world was very much like an engineer. You are using the allosphere to explore, according to what I was researching, scientific advancements, like going into the atom, going into the neuron, going into the synapses of the brain. So some of these very interesting forward-thinking scientists are participating in the program. And here I'm going back to someone like my brother. My brother could not properly make the leap between what he's looking at and what he's feeling and the science. He's too much a literalist. Have you run into this with your people that are scientists?
What's so interesting is there's actually a difference between engineers and scientists and artists. Sometimes it's easier for me to communicate with the scientists because the scientists are looking for the same kinds of things that I'm looking for in their information. They're looking at content-based. Most of my engineering colleagues are engineering systems. So it's been a really interesting kind of triad of people that we work with and understanding their language in order to be able to communicate with them. So, and I do have some pushback from scientists as well. One of the interesting things are the difference between experimental scientists and computational scientists. The experimentalists believe that the computer doesn't generate real data. So how can they trust anything that they see in what we visualize? And the computational scientists say, oh, those experimentalists do one experiment and they think they know exactly what's happening in the data. So it's really an interesting group that we work with. And one of the most exciting things is to be able to be there and be able to represent the data in a way that is unusual to them. And for them to start finding patterns in their information that they wouldn't ever uncover, because I'm probably doing something very wrong with their data because it artistically is very pleasing. But what the Allosphere is, it's really my big performance instrument. So think of this as my largest instrument that I've made. It's built in an echo-free chamber, but we have 54.1 channels of sound, 3D spatial sound. You're totally in visual data, and you can almost, it's almost like standing on the planet and looking to the horizon and being able to be in whatever world you want to be, whether it's an atom or it's the real world or just an abstract piece of art. So it's real, and it's multi-user. So a number of researchers come in and they'll pick up a virtual device and start working with their complex system. It's really, it's what I call performing complex systems. And so I don't know if I'm explaining it right to you, but.
Well, what I also love about some of those programs that we've experienced in the sphere, Joanne, are when we're talking about multi-dimensions, right? It really is becomes this. So Elizabeth, we're in there and they're like, oh yeah, so this thing we're showing you is actually in four dimensions, but we don't really know four dimensions. So it's really a shadow. So you're sitting there, Elizabeth, and you're like, what? We're looking at really cool shadows.
Right. Well, that's what's so interesting, because we're, you know, the only way I can understand it as a composer, because I don't understand any of this stuff. I'm just the regular composer that's had nothing to do in high school and doesn't even know my own programming language that my wonderful hybrid graduate students have made. But the only way I can understand it is that we're a three-dimensional being, and in order to see ourselves two-dimensionally, we cast a shadow. So that's a two-dimensional figure of what we are. But then my grads are telling me, okay, well, then look at this, you know, four-dimensional shape. Yeah, you're actually only looking at the shadows of this four dimensions and three dimensions. And that's when Richard is right on, because a lot of this is dealing with consciousness.
So I want to bring it into sort of a symbolic analogy, maybe. So, you know, there's different, as you were saying, like there's the, and I thank you for that distinction between the engineering mind and the scientific exploratory mind. And then the artist mind that's, you know, that's sort of jumping into the future, as Freddie was saying. So a shadow that is a shadow of a shadow is more or less just a metaphor for art in general. You know, it is the best way I could think about what the project is telling me in just a short few, you know, 5 hours or so of trying to get my head around it. But I want you to talk a little bit more, Joanne, about the word that you said that I think might, for me, tie a lot of what we're talking about together. And Freddie, chime in. You mentioned that the people that you're working with are looking for or seeing or hope to conceive of through your big instrument, your huge 30-foot instrument. they're searching after pattern.
That's right.
Okay, I would like to hear more about that.
Most of your data, whether it's experimental or whether it's a mathematical model, it's lines and curves. And you know, I mean, it's really interesting when I brought the physicist in to our visualization of the hydrogen-like atoms electron splitting a hydrogen atoms electron in superposition, the Schrodinger equation. I worked very closely with the physicist in order to represent that. It wasn't like I just said, hey, guys, come on in and look at this. I sat down with my physicist and said, what are you looking for? And he explained to me, he goes, well, you know, hydrogen is the first element of the periodic table. It has one electron, but the electron can be in different orbitals at the same time. That's what they call these probability waves. And I said, you know, he goes, think about the ocean and you see all these different currents are making these different waves that are crossing. He goes, that's what I want to see. I want to see the crossing of these probability waveforms. And so then I'll sit there and say, okay, well, let's take the mathematical model and think about how we're going to visualize this. Let's think about if we threw a rubber band into an ocean and we watched it twist, then we'd see where these currents cross. So that's what we did. We do agent-based data mining. So we made this little object that looked like a rubber band, and we gave it the mathematical parameters of go out into the quantum ocean and look for these quantum number combinations. And that was according to the physicists. They're the ones that are putting in the math. Then it goes out and they start to make these visualizations. And the physicists will say, well, wow, that's what I see in my mind when I see these numbers. And I believe that's the forms I'm going to see. And then they get excited because they've never been able to bring it up to dynamic scale. And they've never been able to do it in real time where they can just change a number immediately and they can just see the change of the shape. And it's like this intuitive process that is really making them go, wow, I've never been able to work with this complex information in such a simple way. And for me, it's like, wow, I don't understand quantum mechanics, but this is really cool. And I'm starting to understand what these probability wave functions do and how they work by making a language that we all can understand. We see, we hear, we interact, we live in a complex system, for heaven's sakes. How in the heck do we navigate in the world? And so, you know, this is kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to make a language that everybody, it doesn't matter who you are, you can understand physics. You can understand four-dimensional geometry. So.
Okay, so, you know, as you were telling me this, Joanne, I was picturing, so I took about a year of study with a maestro in Indian music, and she actually played a number of instruments, and my mom was well enough at the time to come and hear one of her concerts, and I told you my mom has perfect pitch, and she could hear the quarter, so that, you know, there's the whole tone, she could hear the half, she could hear the quarter, and I can't. I couldn't. I know I could sort of get a sense of what she was hearing. But the musician, of course, lived in that world. And I don't know why I got that picture of studying with her as you were telling me this you know, about the pattern seeking and the testing of the theories and the looping nature